Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of humanity and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group. And every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, legal, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the staff, board, management of Midcoast Radio Project, Inc. and KKFI. Thank you. This is Sharon Lockhart here in the KKFI studio at 39th and Main with most of the Every Woman crew and a new person, Marie Jackson, that we're helping to train. We have Ebony on the board. She'll be joining in and will be giving us the news in a few minutes. And Marvita is an intern with Every Woman. And our guests today are Sheptu Kosatan Buckner, Executive Director of the Kansas City Jazz Museum. And our second guest will be Claudia Nelson, who is with CCO Communities Creating Opportunities. And she'll be telling us about an event coming up on September 8th, Every Voice, Every Vote. Welcome, everyone, to Every Woman. And now let's go to the news.
12 years after the end of the apartheid, black students at Pretoria High School for Girls in Pretoria, South Africa, were told to chemically straighten their hair. This past weekend, students with Afro hairstyles and braids gathered to protest the long-standing rule. Tiseso Pedla graduated from Pretoria High School for Girls in 2014. She says the so-called, quote, rule is an unwritten one that is still enforced. When she first applied to the school, she had an afro. I got accepted to the school thinking that it was okay to have an afro, because they give you a code of conduct to read and sign, and there is nothing with regards to African hair or an afro in the code of conduct, she says. When I got there, I was told that I looked very untidy and looked as if I wasn't part of the school uniform. School staff asked her to chemically straighten her hair. They would remind me every day, Pedla says. I refused, because if I use chemicals on my hair, my scalp gets extremely damaged. It literally burns. According to Pedla and other students, if they didn't straighten or braid their natural hair, they were not allowed to come to class, but would instead be sent to detention. Students protesting were also critical of the school's language policy. Children that are Africans, German, or Spanish are allowed to speak their native tongues, but we South Africans are not allowed to speak our African native tongues, Pedla says. They're taking away our black heritage. The question is, if we cannot be black in school, where can we be black? It's a school in Africa. Why are we not all allowed to be black in Africa? Where can we be black if we can't be black in Africa? PRI reported August 30th. Overdosing on prescription drug combinations plays a part in the growing rates of premature death among white women. While death rates are falling for blacks and Hispanics in middle age, whites are dying prematurely in growing numbers, particularly white women. One reason? A big increase in overdoses, primarily from opiates, but also from anti-anxiety drugs, which are often prescribed in tandem. Both drugs suppress the central nervous system, temporarily easing pain and anxiety while suppressing respiration, heart rate, and the gag reflex. Alcohol has the same effect, and combining any of these can be fatal. Between 1999 and 2014, the number of middle-aged white women dying annually from opiate overdoses shot up 400%, according to a Washington Post analysis of data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Anti-anxiety drugs contributed to a growing share of the 54,000 deaths over that period, reaching a third in the last several years, the Post found, though spotting reporting in death records makes it likely that the combination is even more widespread. The Washington Post reported August 31st. Mama, the house was shaking, my 8-year-old nephew told my sister this morning, as he, along with many of us, felt the tremors from the 5.6 magnitude earthquake that took place in northeast Oklahoma this morning. Seven states felt the effects, including Missouri and Kansas. And now for some advice for girls for fun. Sharon, this was, someone shared this on a Facebook post?
Yes.
Facebook post, okay. So listen up, girls. Be loud and gross and take up space. Stop saying sorry and start saying, don't interrupt me. Stop saying, because I have a boyfriend, and start saying, because I said so. Say no and say, none of your business. Take selfies and don't laugh at jokes that aren't funny. Be snide and sarcastic, and wear your hair the way you like it. Help out other girls and be vocal about what makes you mad. Be masculine and feminine, and both, and be unapologetic. Don't set aside your comfort for boys' egos.
Very good. And as women, we too are girls, so we can also relate to that advice.
Yeah, we're shaking things up along with the mini earthquake we felt.
Mother Earth has spoken.
I know, I felt it. Welcome to Every Woman. It's good to have everybody here. It's always a party atmosphere in here when we get the strong women together in this studio. So we're glad to have today Chepto Kasatani Buckner from the American Jazz Museum. Welcome, Chepto, to the show.
Thank you.
You know, there's so much going on with the Jazz Museum. I have to say, I'm kind of partial, and I'm really happy to see all the activities because they are so diverse. You're really engaging the whole community in the things that are happening at the Jazz Museum. Why did you choose to go that route?
You know, I think what needed to happen at the Jazz Museum needed to happen very quickly. The perception that we have locally in terms of what that museum has been doing for years and what needs to be done is a very damaging perception. And so it was very important for me to go in and really make some dramatic changes right away. But some of it was low-hanging fruit. For example, creating Fast Fridays at 18th and Vine, it was a no-brainer because not only is it building the local community and the people that live, the residents of 18th and Vine, to have a place to go every Fast Friday, but it's also the beginning to connect 18th and Vine to the crossroads. And then also a lot of ways to present jazz, because maybe not everybody listens to jazz or enjoys the way jazz is created or developed. But I think what is very important is to understand the context of jazz, especially in Kansas City, which is related to the history of African Americans and that kind of thing. And so packaging jazz in a way that is both teaching history, but also teaching the performance and also emphasizing the heritage of Kansas City's jazz.
Sorry about that, Chepto. This is Ebony here. Can you share what is the history that African Americans have with jazz?
The history that African Americans have with jazz started in the 1800s in New Orleans. In a lot of ways, actually, you could say it started in Africa. I think what I talk about is that when you grow up in Africa, music and dance is part of everything that you do in everyday life. And I think the slaves that were brought into the Americas kept that music and soul in them. It never went away. And so part of the challenges and in expressing themselves and in New Orleans, you know, where it's called Conga Square, is where they started creating their dances and music, which they were allowed to do once a week after, you know, as a rest. And from there, jazz developed, blues and gospel and jazz developed, being coming from Africa and African Americans creating. Now, you could also say jazz in a lot of ways, though, is also a gumbo, because if you look at New Orleans, you had Spaniards and the French and, of course, some of the Europeans. And so all that music together, the classical music combined with the African music, created jazz. But it's also about jazz in terms of the African-American context is an art form that really expresses what we are feeling as a people at that particular time through the music, through the improvisation and that kind of thing. It tells our story, not only today, yesterday, but for the future. It continues to be a storyteller of the African-American experience. Mm-hmm.
I like your reference to it being a gumbo, because we as a people, African Americans, are a gumbo ourselves, and can be, we're a part of a lot of different, well, we're a part of everything, yes. as is everyone. So I appreciate that. The tying it in to the First Fridays, I was actually downtown yesterday and had a great time. I was at the Kauffman Center, though, for a celebration there, but tying it into the community, which it is already a part of that fabric, I think that that's a, like you said, low-hanging fruit and a pretty seamless move, for people to be able to relate and make that connection. We had Marvita, who was our guest the other week, and she just talked about how some of the locals come usually with some of their out-of-town guests, bring the locals to the jazz museum, because some local people we don't realize what's right. going on there.
A lot of times you find that local people don't visit the sites that tourists
yes.
seem to know so much about. And that was Karen Griffin.
Yes, yes.
She's the community
outreach coordinator for the museum. Yeah.
Yes, and she has a great way of telling engaging stories about some of the major spotlighting features at the Jazz Museum. Plus, she just really helps to bring audiences of all ages into the gumbo that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I love about what's happening with the Jazz Museum. It is a gumbo, and it's not just something of the past, but it's something going on right now. And I think that's part of what I'm seeing happening with your vision that you have for the Jazz Museum. Plus, I do want to ask, being from Kenya, how has that affected your view of what's going on at the Jazz Museum? Or what have you brought with you to help you move along in your vision and helping to manifest your vision at the museum?
Well, I guess that worldly, diaspora view is very important. I think the idea that music and dance is very important. I consider it's a basic level. It's also a connector. It's a universal language. And so coming from Africa, to me, I see art and I see jazz and music being a place where you can connect people, even though you don't know each other's language. So that is a piece. But then, there's a big influence in Africa, which is Afro jazz. Mm-hmm. And you grew up in Africa listening to a number of major jazz musicians. I mean, Manu Dibango is a major musician, but also Yuma Sekela, which most people know from South Africa in terms of music. But one of my childhood friends is actually an Afro jazz musician. And so in both South Africa and in Kenya and other places in Africa, there are huge jazz festivals that mm-hmm. are going on. So there's that part. I think also what I see is that the opportunity that we have as a community, not only to honor this heritage of jazz, but to also elevate the contributions that African Americans have made for this country. Mm-hmm. It is also a motivation for me, because I have two children who are Kenyan-American, but in most instances, they are really African-Americans. They were born in this country. Mm-hmm. So my motivation is to make sure that this heritage that belongs to them is preserved, maintained, and elevated. So I come from that angle as a mother mm-hmm. and as a parent, making sure that we do that. The other piece that I think is very important is not just the performance and that kind of thing, but there are two key things that I want to elevate at the museum in a major way, and that is education and also the collections, and making the collections, the historical collection, accessible for research for the community to see and to use and for scholars to use. But the biggest thing that we are launching that I think is very important is what we're calling the Kansas City Jazz and Music Academy. We already have over 80 kids registered for that academy. It's going live September 10th. The goal is to build future musicians and future jazz musicians to continue to preserve that history. But it's also an ability to give kids something to do that can build character, even if they don't want to become professional musicians, that they engage in something that is music and it's an heritage that belongs to them. It also that the academy is going to bring in mentors. So we're going to bring in elder statesmen of jazz and elders in the community. Being African, I believe in the wiseness of elders and bringing them into the music program as mentors for these kids. So teaching character, not just through the art, but also through connecting with the community, with the elders. We are also hoping that in a lot of ways that we'll infuse the idea, the importance of music and the brain. And studies have been done about why music is very critical to learning, but also that art, if you have an art desert in a community, you don't build that cultural perspective from a child. So those aspects, it's all music, it's professional, it's the cultural aspect, it's the heritage aspects, it's the character aspect, and the preservation of the history. So those are some major things that we're working on.
My sister, my 8-year-old nephew, who I referenced in the news, who told my sister the house was shaking this morning, he is learning a bit about jazz, and my sister has helped them with pick out books and do some different things. She started to homeschool now, and so a part of homeschooling, I have a 4-year-old niece as well. She's looking for things in the community and places that she can take them, so that they can experience hands-on. And so I'm delighted to hear about some of the things that you're doing with children at the Jazz Museum, especially selfishly for my niece and nephew.
Yeah, and it's free. So we want community support because we want every child to be able to afford to be in an arts program. The academy is not the only piece. We have jazz storytelling every First Friday. We have jazz musicians telling stories using jazz. So we can have up to 100 to maybe 200 kids every First Friday doing that. We are planning to implement other youth education programs, specifically visual arts. The challenge of not having visual arts introduced to especially kids in the urban core is my major focus, is to give them the whole entire holistic part of art, not just the performance and the music, but also the visual arts as well. So all those are things that we believe that this idea of really building this generation is what we've got to be focused on. It's hard to change a 40-year-old mind, but I think really this is the future and this is the generation that we want. But the other biggest piece I think that is very, very important for us to do is that for Kansas City, to get away from the truth divide. This idea that because the Jazz Museum is east of truth and because 18th and the perception that 18th and Vine is not safe, it's just that. It is a perception. And so I think we have a lot of a big hill as 18th and Vine businesses and institutions to really change the local perception. It's not a national perception. It's not an international perception. It's a local perception. So what I encourage all of us is to change that mindset and really begin to embrace each other and connect to each other through art and really kill that that divide of truth. And one of the things I want to make sure is that we have quality art East of Truce. It's not just West of Truce, that the kids and the communities East of Truce continue to experience and enjoy quality art.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a, even I hear you saying the perception, but like a lie that we've chosen to believe.
Yes.
You know, with some of the, who is it? Oh, don't get me, audience, but whoever wrote that book, The Art of War, I can't, his name isn't coming to my head, but he said something, it's something to the effect of, to keep a war going on is based on deception. Like, you have to have a lie to keep it going. And so once you start speaking your own truth, then, you know, it kind of destroys and obliterates the lie. And so you just talking about that, no, there actually is quality art. It is a safe space to come. And that's just something that we're holding on to, believing and suffering for it.
Well, when I heard about when I first heard about First Friday and the Jazz Museum 18th and Vine, and that you could start there and park your car, and I thought that's brilliant, because if you've ever tried to park in the Crossroads area in the center of it, it's impossible. But there's trolleys that are taking people. After you start out at 18th and Vine, you can just work your way across to the 18th and McGee area, and then from there there's the, where is it, Central or Broadway or wherever it is.
Main, and there are no trolleys yet, but I'm working on that. Hopefully some people can help with that. But we have Bike Walk KC, and really the bus stops right on 18th and Vine to be able to do that. I think also part of the phase one of the projects and the funding from the city will create a streetscape between 18th and Vine to the Crossroads. So that's going to also help in that kind of thing. But I can tell you, even without that connection, Fast Friday at 18th and Vine is growing. We've expanded it. There are more vendors. The community is coming out. And what I love to see is not only the skill set of the vendors, but that the families and the communities are coming there just to be together as a community, to connect with people. And then we've started a number of things on how we engage the youth as well. We are partnering with Jason Bates, who is doing neo-soul and a number of the music that is really attractive to the young. And so we're not just looking at the people who just love jazz and that kind of thing. We're looking at all performance and culture and trying to bring everybody and get them engaged.
But that reminds me of the great jazz musicians who did want to stay relevant, like Miles Davis. He connected with the youth. He didn't just, I mean, he had a lot of things going on, but he didn't just do one thing. And I think that is what jazz is. It does develop and it grows. And speaking of First Fridays, I think one thing that helps a community grow is when you have people walking on the streets. And I think that's what is happening more at 18th and Vine. People are starting to walk that corridor, and you're seeing, you know, more things happening. And I was really happy to be a part of one of the features that you had was the painting.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the status of that now?
Oh, I would love to say about that. So with all the strifes that have been going on, you know, with African Americans and police groups, what we thought about is, again, that saying that I say, art is a connector. And so we decided that we wanted to spill the paint, not the blood. Mm-hmm. And so we worked with artists, major artist Michael Toombs, who we created a mural using images from our collections, historical images and that kind of thing, and creating a mural that started with jazz at the beginning to jazz in the middle, and when it really became totally integrated to the future of 18th and Vine and jazz, and invited the community to come and paint. And it's been very, very popular. It is going on very well. We are hoping to actually unveil it Fast Friday in November. So the Fast Friday in November, we hope everybody in the community can come, and you can see, we will reveal the paint. It's been wonderful. We've had people from all walks of life, young, old, white, come in. Tech N9ne was there, actually, you know, putting his touch on there, and some of the media folks have been there. But this is when you saw the people that came together and you saw how people were coming together, these are just, I consider it simple but extraordinary things, right? Mm-hmm. And it really, everybody has been very excited about that. So again, a variety of things, and it's all kind of art. And again, my belief, art is a connector. It's an international, it's a universal language, and should be part of everyday life.
Can people still come and paint, or is that part closed off?
People can still come and paint. Mondays and Thursdays is when people can come and paint.
Mondays and Thursdays. Is there a particular time?
5 p.m.
5
p.m. Mondays and Thursdays.
Okay. Does it end at a certain time?
Probably by 7 we'll be done.
Okay. So 5 to 7 Mondays and Thursdays, yes. We can still come and paint the mirror if we haven't already. Okay. Yes. Fantastic.
I was able to put my touch on that wall, on that mural, so I'm really looking forward to seeing the day when it's unveiled, and I hope to be able to stop by and add a few touches, too.
Well, and the other thing that I just forgot about that we are going to actually, we're creating a coloring book out of the mural, both for children and adults. So if you don't get to paint the mural, you could actually, have a coloring book that you can paint as well.
Well, I have to ask this because you're on the Every Woman Feminist show. Can you say something about a woman in jazz, even if it's your favorite female jazz artist or something that we may not, a myth you want to bust here or just something about women in jazz and just kind of that influence?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, the women liberation started with jazz, because think about it, women were performing in speakeasies, and so those were places when women were not doing that. If you think about it, with jazz is when we changed the way that the women came out of those Victorian clothes and started wearing short dresses and that kind of thing, and cutting their hair and having heels, those kind of, so you could dance. You couldn't dance in those Victorian clothes, the swing and that kind of thing. So I think women in jazz changed and brought up the women liberation. I would also say that we don't give enough credit to women in jazz who are instrumentalists, that played sax or piano and that kind of thing. And we have one of our greatest, Mary Lou Williams, a major woman pianist here from Kansas City, that was great. So those are some of the things that I would like to bust out about women. And they've always, and then I have this African saying that I always like to say, that behind every successful person there is a woman.
Okay.
Well, we just want to thank you for all the wisdom, all the connecting with art, and all the encouraging things that you've been doing in the community. How long have you been the executive director?
5 months.
Oh, my goodness. And already, already it seems like you've been here all along. And I know that prior to that, you were at the public library.
Yes, yes.
And we just want to thank you for all of the work that you've been doing.
Thank you.
Between digital inclusion, we were talking about shortly, and now jazz, and being director of the Jazz Museum. So just want to thank you once again for coming to Every Woman, and we hope to join you on Fridays, first Fridays, and at other events at the Jazz Museum.
Yes.
And that's Chaptaw, help me here, Kosatan.
Chaptaw Kosatan Buckner.
Chaptaw Kosatan Buckner.
Yes.
Remember that name. It's hard. It's very hard.
You can just do Chaptaw. You don't have to do. You don't need the other names. You just need Chaptaw.
Thank you so much, everyone. You are listening to the Every Woman Show on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We are going to take a station break, and we will be back with our second guest.
KKFI Crossroads Music Fest presents Kelly Hunt, hosting a soulful songwriters workshop, as well as a women in music panel discussion to follow, with Kelly, Jessica Page, and Michelle Bacon. Wednesday, September 7th at Collection on the corner of 16th and Grand. This event is free and part of the KKFI Crossroads Music Fest mission to educate the next generation of musicians. From 3 to 6 p.m. on September 7th at Collection. Seating is limited. You must register to reserve your seat. Workshop information and reservations at cmfkc.com or kkfi.org/events.
The beautiful. Missouri River Solidarity with Standing Rock stands for No Dakota Access Pipeline.
90.1 FM KKFI.
Demonstration of support for Standing Rock, water, and life at Berkeley Riverfront Park, Sunday, 11 to 4 p.m. Information at sacredstonecamp.org. This message, a service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
A fundraiser for KKFI and supported by Kansas City's Neighborhood Tourist Development Fund. Festival passes are on sale now at cmfkc.com or at Josie Records for $20. The 90.1 FM KKFI Crossroads Music Fest, Saturday, September 10th in the Crossroads Arts District. For all artists and festival information, including VIP passes, visit cmfkc.com or kkfi.org/events.
We're back with Every Woman, and Marvita tipped me on to this. She sent me an email this week about Every Voice, Every Vote. Or is Every Vote, Every Voice? I've gotten it backwards here.
Every voice, every vote.
Every voice, every vote. Yes. And we have with us, we're so happy to have Claudia Nelson, who's the chair of CCO, Communities Creating Opportunity. And you guys are doing lots of work that we're going to have you tell us about.
We absolutely are doing lots of work. I just flew back from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where we went to shake up the Fed.
Oh, really?
Yes, the Federal Reserve Bank has their annual meeting there, where they have economists that come from around the world to meet secretly. And so people showed up from across the United States, from various cities, to talk about full employment, sustainable jobs, what interest rates are, how they affect working class people. It was very interesting. They actually sat and met and talked with us and answered questions. And this is the third year that this group has gone called Fed Up. That's is started by the Centers for Popular Democracy.
That's great. That's Fed Up. I like that.
Yeah. So yeah, we've actually met on the Fed's lawn here, too, with press conferences and done some things. So we are very active. CCO's established over 40 years ago in the Catholic Church. It is a faith-based organizing effort, and Father Norm Rodert was the founder of CCO. And so his legacy carries on. The 4963 neighborhood back 40-some years ago was into blockbusting and redlining, and those things were happening. And so he and the church organized to step in and stop some of that things. So they've moved on from blockbusting to talking about things like triple-digit interest rates on small-dollar loans. That's been an effort that we've been involved in for over 15 years. That's how I started with CCOs, that effort, because I have people in my family.
You were involved in that hearing then. I attended that hearing at the municipal auditorium.
Yes, I've been in the hearings. I've been in Jefferson City a number of times with busloads of people to talk to our legislators about putting in legislation that those rates need to be capped, that it is a debt trap for people that get in that, need a loan, but can't get out of it because the interest rates are just, I mean, they're immoral. There's not another word for it.
From your meetings, this is Ebony, from your meetings, did you honestly have any hope that things will change as far as, you know, setting, you know, intentionally? I mean, you know, we need to be honest about, you know, just like you're saying, it's more like intentionally setting mm-hmm. higher rates for certain people, certain groups, and just kind of with the Fed Up, the Fed Up sitting. Are you hopeful at all from having spoken with them, or do you think they just...
There are frequent times during their meetings I sit and roll my eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, they don't get it. But over time, especially with the triple-digit interest rates, that we have talked to so many people, we have brought this to the attention of everyone. And not everybody's educated about these things, so mm-hmm. part of what CCO does is educate the public. People who don't live in areas where, like I do, where there's five payday loans, mm-hmm. five payday loans, all right mm-hmm. there together, and don't understand why those people are waiting in line to mm-hmm. borrow money. Educating them that the majority of people borrowing those loans are single mothers. Mm-hmm. They're borrowing enough money to get the car fixed, to pay the gas bill, mm-hmm. That they're making less than substantial income to make it from payday to payday, and they can't get a small dollar loan from banks anymore. So what happens in a crisis is that you just go right in and show them paycheck stub and you got a loan, but then mm-hmm. what you're stuck with is paying it off in a week or two, mm-hmm. or you get in a cycle of debt. They'll, you know, pick that debt up again, interest mm-hmm. rate go up, and in Missouri there is no cap. They could go up to as much as $1,900 mm-hmm. on interest rates, and their average is right now between $300 and $400 mm-hmm. for the average loan. We've talked to people whose story is that they've lost their homes. Mm. You know, very easily title loans, lose their cars, lost their job because you show up, you give them your voided check from your bank account, and they can just go in there and just withdraw that money and withdraw that money and withdraw that money, mm-hmm. and you can't stop it. The banks don't let you cut it off. They said they're not allowed to cut it off. So all of a sudden, you're in a cycle of debt that you can't get out of because mm-hmm. you borrowed a few hundred dollars.
And the bank fees stack up, I yes. heard in the hearing. The banks yes. are very, that's how they make most of their money is
right.
from charging fees.
From the fees. Yes.
And those $35 fees for bad
yeah, the
checks.
The check's going to bounce eventually.
Checks.
You're working minimum wage in the state of Missouri, what, seven something an hour. And you don't have that much money in the bank anyway, maybe just enough to cover the rent, and then along comes the payday loan and takes that away. So yes, it's going to bounce, and yes, you're going to pay fees on top of fees and lose whatever standing you have with the bank and still be in debt to the payday loan. It is a crisis, especially in our state where there is no cap. Mm-hmm. And so many people that are suffering are people who can ill afford to lose more. I mean, they're low-income people working, struggling from paycheck to paycheck. So they're not the group of people who have some cash to throw away mm-hmm. or to lose, which makes it horrible in the fact that it is single mothers that really disturbs me about mm-hmm. it, that's the part of society that's not making the same as men are, that not, and minimum wage doesn't cover anything, and then have a family that they need to take care of, and a crisis happens and you don't have crisis money, so you got to mm-hmm. go borrow from somebody that's going to then gouge you mm-hmm. as long as they can. It is immoral. It absolutely mm-hmm. as a person of faith, there's no other description for it. Not that we want to put payday loans out of business, but there is a fairer way mm-hmm. to make their income without damaging people. And as I said, the concentration for those payday loans is in black and brown communities. Mm-hmm. That's just the truth
the fact,
of the matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's no limits on how high their interest rates can go is also something that can be concerning. There was, I was talking with Margaret May, who was offering, at least in the Ivanhoe neighborhood, a solution for educating people about their financial situation, because a lot of people don't even at this point don't even think about the bank anymore as a place to do business. But she was saying, you know, you don't have to, you can deposit your money in the bank and you can cash your check, you know, because of you have a free bank account. And so is that an option that you feel would be helpful for people to know, to be more educated about the services that are provided at banks, even though small loans aren't so much a
right.
part of those
it
services?
It absolutely is, and we are currently working with banking industries about starting back with some small dollar loans. Maybe not what it used to be years ago, but at least something so that people have an option other than going to payday loans. We know people in the city who are starting up credit unions and all sorts of options for that. People do need to be educated. A lot of the people that are at the payday loan borrowing money some people haven't managed their money, but some people don't have money to manage either. So you got to have money to manage. If you're not making enough to manage anything, that's hard. But a lot of times people have done so much with their credit, just trying to make it, and not knowing how to do the right thing.
I heard that, I can't remember the percentage, but not very many people have $400 in the bank in this country.
Isn't that sad?
It is. It's very scary. So if you have a need for new tires for your car or an alternator or whatever, what are you going to do?
Yeah. It's more, you know, this, some, I read this, I don't know, maybe some several years ago now, but someone made this suggestion to get rid of money. And, you know, I thought, get rid of money. And then I told myself, I said, well, I'm acting like we've always had it, as if we, you know, as if we're not able to live without it. But, you know, what would the Fed think of that? If we could, you know, like, what would I do? And I say, you know, I'm laughing, but I say that with a great deal of sincerity of us really needing to take, I think, I feel some radical looks at changing some major things. Like, what, you know, if you think about a lot of issues that people have, money always is right around there, number one, two, in whatever situation we're talking about. It's either somebody doesn't have enough of it, or there, you know, is something associated with it that's causing a lot of anxiety. And I do feel that it's a part of a conversation that now more than ever needs to be entertained. What if we just got rid of money? And what other way would we be able to function and be more creative around this process? Because it seems like if we do, and even somebody can say, well, if you do that, they're just going to do something else. But a part of that is us, I feel like, not even tapping into our own creativity and realizing, you know, we can live a different way. And it hasn't always been the way that it is now. We don't have to operate on the same systems that we've been operating on. And, you know, and being in debt and being in situations where someone can come in and just have an unlimited reign to say, I'll charge you this amount of, you know, and just, it's all centered around money and insecurity, really, you know, threatening your very basic minimum needs to survive.
Well, I don't know if the Fed would be willing to live without money. Maybe that's this pie in the sky thing we'd think about later. But this,
I don't think, I'll say this though.
We've been living off of money, so I don't know that it'd be really easy to get people.
I'm not saying it'll be easy, but I don't think it's pie in the sky. I actually think it's on the table right now, because just because of a lot of things that are going on, and even how we're realizing how we're more connected as a, just globally, that we can find a greater way to live together. And I think it's those types of things that we do really need to consider, given what we're coming up against now.
Actually, I love to barter, so a barter system would really work.
Yeah, there are some groups out there that are working on trading out, what is it I have that I can trade with you? And while she was talking about no money, I was thinking, what do I have plentiful? Plastic bags. We could trade in plastic bags.
I got shoes. I could trade some shoes. Yeah, it's a great thought. I'm sure it's not on the table for the Fed. But
that's okay.
Yeah, we tell them the story, and them and other news media story of my son. My youngest son, Paul, has a wife and five children, very young children. He works two jobs. She works a job. She has $100,000 in debt for student loans. Both of his jobs are not paying enough for them to live off of. All three of their jobs are not paying enough for them. Neither one of them have health insurance. He has diabetes, high blood pressure, and all the stress-related diseases that people are having because of struggling. Actually, a lot of research is being done about stress and how it is overwhelming for people who don't have income, don't have health insurance, and just the day-to-day struggle is really causing people extreme stress and diseases that only come from stress. He's always worked two jobs. He worked two jobs in high school. He's a working man. Always worked and struggled, and 60 hours or more a week, not even able to see his kids. It's just really bearing down on him. Have to help him with his medicine because he didn't take his insulin because he doesn't have the medication and money to buy it. He can't afford health insurance. He doesn't qualify for the Obamacare, and he falls just an inch above getting Medicaid. So Medicaid expansion is something that's really, really, CCLs really work toward, because there are thousands of people dying across the state of Missouri because of lack of health care. Not from incurable diseases, from things that are curable, but not able to afford their medication, not able to see a doctor.
So with your, we're going to take a break right now. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We're here at Every Woman, and we are talking about, we're visiting with one of the representatives from the
Communities Creating
Opportunities. Yes, CCO. And they, because of all the issues that they deal with, we were talking about a lot of different issues, including their recent visit to the Fed's secret meeting and the impact of interest rates on our communities. And we want to talk also about what's going on with your Every Voice, Every Vote campaign that's going on right now. This is the season of elections, and a lot of things are happening. Whether or not it's actually going to impact anybody is another question. So what are you guys doing to make sure that it does impact the community?
We have begun to have issue, what we call issue assemblies. We had one earlier this year where we invite the public to come in, neighborhood leaders and community people to come in and actually sit in groups and talk about issues that are playing in our communities. Things like health care, things like racism, things like child care. And so we're planning our second one for this year on September the 8th. It'll be from 5:30 to 7:30 at the health department where CCO is housed. And it is open to the public. We want people to show up, especially since this is nearing the election season. And along with that, we are really encouraging women to be involved. We have a group that we've organized called Sisterhood, and Sisterhood meets monthly. We are seeking women to be leaders in their community and training them and teaching them not who to vote for, but what the issues are, so they can go back and talk about intelligently what's the issue about health care, what is the real issue about the payday loan, how that interest rate is not coming back to the community, and how it's affecting people, how stress is affecting those things. We're really about educating the public. We're really about developing leaders, people that can take the message and go out there. We really are focusing on those communities in Kansas City that have a voter apathy, where people have just given up on voting. They don't vote for presidents. They don't vote for nothing. But the records show that women, as a rule, outnumber men in being regular voters. They vote in every election. That's the city elections, the county elections, the state and federal, more than men do. So women are powerful, and their voice is powerful. But like the little Facebook thing about having girls listen, we just don't use our power. I've always been the one to talk back and tell people to quit interrupting me. I've been a rebel. I've been one of the speakers to talk with them at some of their meetings and talk and have other lead women in leadership roles to come in and tell them what it means to be a leader. And for me, what it means first is to stand up for my family, stand up for them. I am the matriarch in my family. I'm great grandmother, and they all, most of them live here in this city. So I've lived in this city all my life. I know the issues of living in the inner city and growing up black in the city. I know the things that plague us. I know the things that plague my family, and we're not exclusive. It's overwhelming. It's across the country. So encouraging women to talk. The first time I got interviewed at KFI was Walt Bodine 30-some years ago to talk about battered women syndromes.
That was KCUR. How many years ago?
Oh, God, it's been 30 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was so not afraid to open up and talk, to say what it is and how it is, and what I don't like about it, and what we need to do something about it, and not just to talk about it, but to present myself to the Federal Reserve, to the legislators in Jefferson City, stand toe to toe and tell them something needs to be done. My child is dying, and so are a lot of children dying. Parents and young people and young families are suffering and struggling, and you know, the people that we elect into office seem to sit by and not care. So we want to educate people. And this, every voice, every vote, we're going to be talking about issues that are going to be some that we can vote for in November, and some that we want to happen. We want to see people who come into office be on our side about these issues. So whether it's not whether you're Democrat or Republican, it's to stand up for what's right. Do the moral thing so that everybody comes, that nobody's left out, that everybody is covered by this economy, that women get fair wages. We don't need to make 78% on a dollar or whatever that is when we do the same job and have the same qualifications. That's immoral. Why be treated like second-class citizens? This is new millennium. The same stuff is going on. Somewhere we have to lift our voices and make a change. So not only women are invited to this meeting, but we're inviting everyone to take a part.
I think I'm getting hope just listening to you, because sometimes we do feel like we're a lone voice in the wilderness and that nobody's paying attention. Yeah. But listening to you talk, it's like women everywhere. We just came out of Women's Equality Week, and and we saw a movie, Equal Means Equal. Mm-hmm. And yes, women are beginning to work together, I think, and stand together and be more vocal. I do believe that. We've always been vocal on this program, right. Even though we've been told, oh, you just hate men. That's how they put you down. Oh,
I love men.
Yeah, me too. I've been married 3 times, I always say. But our guest is Claudia. Oh, dear, I didn't turn my phone down. Our guest is Claudia Nelson with CCO. And she is with the Every Voice, Every Vote Assembly.
Issues Assembly.
At the...
It'll be we're at the health department. So we'll be meeting there on 2400 Truce. This is where the South Department is.
Okay,
City South Department.
2400 Truce.
Right.
That's that beautiful new building.
Yes, a beautiful building.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So we are in good partnership with the health department over a lot of issues, gun safety and street violence. We're doing some night walks and some of those things, too. So we're involved in whatever's going on in the community, both in Missouri and Kansas.
Do people need to RSVP to attend that Thursday?
Nope, they just need to show up.
Show up?
Show up.
Oh, 5:15-ish?
Yeah, that'd be good.
2400 Truce.
2400 Truce.
It's on the east side of the street. There's plenty of parking.
West side of the street.
Oh, west side of the street. I must
can't
be
miss
confused.
It. It's the only big building there.
Okay.
And plenty of parking, yes. And other information about CCO, we are on most of the social media networks under We Are CCO.
We Are CCO.
We Are CCO. So if people want to know more about CCO and the things that we're doing and things that are coming up, please, you know, look out there and get in touch.
Thanks so much. Is there how did you get involved? What led you to this organization?
My pastor invited me to CCO and pastors in the inner city were having meetings regularly about payday loan, and so he couldn't attend, and asked me to come in his place. So there I was, the only woman in the room with all these pastors, and there were two women from CCO talking about payday loans and talking about the interest rate, and they wanted to put it 36%. I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. I don't even have a credit card that's high. And I was like, yeah, we know, but, you know, it's a start. And so being the vocal person that's always got her mouth, but I don't know about that, you know, and talking all through the meeting, the CCO staff just came over and just gobbled me up and said, we need to talk to you.
Yeah.
That's how it started.
That's how you became the chair, huh?
Yeah, eventually after that, I've been co-chair. I've been on the board for 6 years.
Oh, okay.
So this is my first year as chair, but I've been involved in almost every effort and running up and down the road to Jefferson City and Jackson Hole and wherever to speak my piece and represent my family, my city, my community. And our organization.
Well, thank you so much for being on Every Woman today, and to Micah Chrisman. Do you suppose he's listening?
Oh, yes. He's been texting me.
Oh, has he? Has he been?
Hey, Micah.
For sending you to us. This is marvelous. We'll have to keep this partnership going and have you back regularly. And you have our email, so you know how to get a hold of us when you have an issue that needs to be talked about or put out in the radio land.
Yes, I will. Thank you so much for the invite, and I'm glad to meet you, ladies.
Nice to meet you also.
And now, let's see, we'll stay tuned for Urban Connection. And I will have to say that Ebony has been on the board today since 11 a.m., and she's going to be on it until 5.
Superwoman.
She's doing a superwoman job today. Yes, she is. I think Donna's out of town. And then after that, MC Richardson comes on with Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City. And next week, we're going to have the Unplaza Art Fair people on to talk about that. And what else are we doing next week? I know we've got something else planned, but I can't remember what.
You do, and I don't remember either, but we'll be back.
We will be back like a bad
man. Another party. Every woman.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Have a great weekend.